helped establish a delegation that went to Zimbabwe. So my role will be to preside over the election of the acting chairperson as guided by NA Rule 130, which says that if the chairperson of the committee is absent or unable to perform the functions of the chair, the committee may elect another of its members as acting chairperson. And Rule 130.2 says an acting chairperson performs the functions and may exercise the powers of the chairperson. On that note, may I please have a nomination of an acting chair? Thank you, Brother.
My name is
Leo Rakuti.
I'm nominating our whip to Honorable
Khadija, do you accept the nomination? Do you have any other nomination? Thank you very much. Congratulations.
All right. Good morning, everyone. First of all, I would like to thank all the people who are participating in the meeting today, in particular the people from the public, because it is very important that they become aware of what the portfolio committees of parliament are doing, so that they will be able to go and enlighten the citizenry outside the parliament itself. I would also like to welcome our foreigners in this committee, in particular Honorable Kayan. I think that she is now an international passport because she is not a South African. You got it already. And Honorable Rafuchi, because of the various deployment they have to undertake. And so I really appreciate the work they are doing, because we are hosting the flag of South Africa High. We know that the color flag is the most beautiful flag in the world. So when you go and support it outside the country, we really appreciate that. Let's hope that you enjoyed your deployment, but you must get a report back, man. What are you up to? All this, because when it was public money, we got expended from you to go to those benefits, man. And then also welcome the department, man, who's going to give us a briefing on the issue of consular services. But I see that we've got the chief, Victor Diniswa, who's in Ditwa, from Ditwa. Oh! No, really, before I can go any further, I'd like the members of the portfolio committee to introduce themselves to the entire public, so that the public must know with whom they are doing, they are dealing with them. We start at the extreme end. At the extreme end, I start with the right now first, because they are on my right. Yeah. I start with that right now on that side.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair. Good morning. I'm Angeline Munsami from the Economic Freedom Fighter.
Morning, everyone. Sandy Kalyan from the Democratic Alliance.
Yes, thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson. My name is Dineo Rafuchi. Thank you. From ANC.
Good morning. My name is Stan Mahila from the ANC.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Andrew Kenye from the ANC Mortgage Committee. Thank you.
Good
morning, honourable members. My name is Rubabano Sikwere, the committee secretary.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Gineo Mshala, content advisor to the committee.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Ben Malone. I'm from the Department of International Relations, Chief Director of Consular Services.
Thank you, Honourable Members. My name is Victor Mdetwa, Acting Chief Director, Consular Affairs. My background is that of a traditional chief. Thank you.
Good morning, Honourable Members. I'm Linda Young from State Federal. Thank you.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is David Matra, and I'm the researcher to the committee.
Morning everyone, my name is Sibo Maputi. I'm media officer assigned to this committee.
Good morning members, my name is Andy Somatanda, assistant to the chairman of the committee. Thank you.
Good morning members, my name is Luvuyo Waishe from PMG, Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
All right. Thank you that we all know each other now. I think you know because someone proposed my name, I'm very happy to this committee. I'm acting on behalf of Honorable Masangu. He's on also a mission from the South African Parliament. He's attended a parliamentary forum in Victoria Falls in Zimbabwe. So he's also on duty. No, he's not looking around, he's on duty. Yeah. And then without a waste of time, really, I think that there are certain things which we must observe at this committee. I think that we have learned with certainness that the people of Zambia have lost their president, President Sata, after a long illness. After a long illness. And then we know that the people of Zambia and the state of Zambia are our really personal friends as South Africa. Because during the 30s of apartheid, they were there with us, where they supported the liberation movement and ensured that we all get the democratic dispensation we're having. So I think that our prayers and thoughts must be with the people of Zambia. And then number two, we must also appreciate the official visit of the Deputy Minister Landers, who went to Cuba led a successful oversight visit to Cuba. And then what is very important, yeah, is an oversight. We've got special relationships with Cuba. So, you know, there are certain protocols which we adopted as Parliament. Take, for example, the Cuban assistance of 350 million, which was extended to Cuba. So we must go over so that ensure that what we said in Parliament here is happening on the ground on the other side. Because we know very well that when the money moves from the bank to the project on the ground, sometimes it disappears along the way. Né? So we have to go overside that. Né? But what is also was very important about this trip is that it was celebrating 20 years of diplomatic relations between South Africa and Cuba. So I think that's something worth celebrating on that regard. But apart from that, again, the United Nations itself has another vote yesterday. Was it yesterday or this morning? It is this morning. Whereby, overwhelmingly, the people of the world condemned the blockade which is executed against Cuba in support of this. So we know very well that as the South African Parliament, we also took a resolution here in support of the people of Cuba. We know very well that if it were not for the Cubans, we will not be where we are today. And what is very important is that even with the Ebola issue in West Africa, Cuba has sent the largest contingent of medical teams there. It shows that their commitment was not on the really. Their commitment is with the people of Africa. So that's why that we have to appreciate that and share those good messages as we move on. But on the sad note, it will be the issue of Jerusalem, Palestine, where the new settlements were approved, which are taking the talks backwards. But I think what is very critical is that as South Africans, we must encourage those people to work together so that they attain a two-state solution, so that they can live in peace with each other. As the critical aspects, I think that our work as this portfolio committee to ensure every platform that we support the struggle of the people of Israel and the people of Palestine, so that they become good neighbors. Without a waste of time, I would like to call for the adoption of the agenda. We've got only one agenda item today, which is the briefing on the policy and practice of the policy of consular and civil services. Can someone propose the adoption of this agenda, please? Honorable Minor?
I propose that we adopt the agenda.
So the agenda has been adopted. It means that the revenue must be smart, so that we can run this thing very quickly. I don't know what you are going to have used the projector here.
It's fine. I'll give the department now the chance to give us a briefing and then we engage immediately after that. You are welcome. Victor.
All
Honorable Chair, Honorable Members of Parliament, my colleagues from DICO, and also my colleagues then from the office of this August committee. First of all, I want to extend an apology from the Director General of the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, Ambassador Jerry Machila, who could not be with us this morning due to other commitments. And also the Deputy Director General, Mr. Ramshaw. Honorable members may be aware that during this period, we are all engaged with the mid-term reviews. We even engaged in our missions abroad, interacting with the missions so that we can be in line with the statement that was just completed last week by the Honorable the Minister of Finance. All members would be may have seen that I have distributed a brochure and a pamphlet. We are going to talk to it as we proceed with our discussion. They are going to form part of the interaction today. We want to thank this opportunity extended to us by the Honorable Committee to come and talk about this specialized service that is located within the Department of International Relations. And this is Consular Affairs. It has got a number of services then that it renders for this country on behalf of the people of this country who are traveling, who are working, who are staying abroad. There are also other services that we render inside the country here at head office that assist our people to be able to advance themselves in terms of education, capacitate themselves in terms of employment abroad. There are certain requirements that our people need to fulfill if they are to advance themselves in terms of education or if they want to be employed outside the Republic of South Africa. As well as facilitation of import and export of controlled goods, like goods related to arms deals and so on. So this then division within DILCO deal with those aspects. We have tried then to flag the very important one so that we don't really keep honorable members the whole day here. Otherwise, this is a vast field, and it is also an interested field that many honorable members may want to, as well, at some point, to specialize on. We are going to talk about consular services within consular affairs. We shall also deal with a summary of the services that said. There are also expectations then from members of the public, and those expectations then versus the real issues, the reality on the ground. We may also talk about diplomatic protection, what that entails. We may also mention a few high-level cases that are also related to consular services. We shall also talk about challenges and trends within the application of these services. And maybe then our annual performance plan, strategic issues that we are faced with currently. And we shall also touch on the statistics. We shall also touch on the Nigeria, the 2012 at the 12th September Lagos disaster, because it falls within this division within DILCO. Honourable members, as I have indicated, consular affairs fall within the broader department of the Diaspora Commission, and it is more lengthy.
Font is very small. I wonder if we shall be able to make it much bigger than that.
The presentation, it is there. It is there. But it is small. Let us talk to it, honorable members. In terms of members, if you have to talk about the number of staff in this division, I don't think one of members should be really worried about the setup. So this unit is at the level of a chief director. It is headed by a chief director, and it has got two directors. So I am currently acting chief director in this business unit with two directors, myself and also a colleague of mine. We have a total of 38 colleagues in the entire establishment of this unit. What is consular affairs? Or what are consular services? As I've indicated, honourable members, this is not, you know, an easy service. But we try then to simplify it so that everybody may have an idea and also an understanding then of what is it that we do. What are consular services within then consular affairs? So it is a service that a country provides to its citizens abroad. So whether those citizens are traveling for visiting or whether those citizens are staying abroad, studying, doing whatever, as long as they still have the citizenship of the Republic of South Africa, we have an obligation to render a service to them. I will explain as we go. So this service consists mainly of a qualified support. I will explain why do I say qualified support. So it is a service that we render to South African citizens who are distressed or destitute abroad. But if you can only underline qualified, because we're going to talk about that. So we render them this citizen to distressed and destitute South Africans abroad. We also render a consular notarial services. I will explain because there's a slide on that one. That is what we call in common language legalization of official public documents. We're going to explain what that implies. We also render, on behalf of the Department of Home Affairs, civic and immigration services outside the Republic of South Africa. So we render this consular service in partnership with our missions abroad, and also in partnership with the Department of Home Affairs, in partnership with the Department of Justice, in partnership with the Department of Social Development, in partnership with the Department of Health. So there's quite a number of departments that we work together because of specialized services that have got a linkage this month. So as I do my presentation, you will see the linkages. Why Home Affairs, why Department of Health, why Department of Justice, and so on. So consular assistance is aimed at protecting the interests of our nationals abroad.
in keeping with customary international law and practice, and the obligations any government has towards its citizens. So we are obligated to render a service to our people outside the Republic of South Africa. Where do we draw the money to? Why do we have that obligation? So we draw our mandate from the Vienna Convention on Consular Relations of 1963. So we are obligated by that convention that we must render these services to our nationals abroad. But if only we can keep at the back of our minds qualified service. Here is a summary of the services we render. We render consular assistance in emergencies, which includes providing support services and coordinating government efforts in hostage cases. We're going to highlight a few cases, hostage cases that currently are in place. We also render assistance to nationals abroad in cases of political turmoil or natural and man-made disasters. The case in hand, the recent disaster in Nigeria. We also communicate on behalf of South African nationals abroad to the next of kin here in South Africa. We are a link. In the event of an emergency abroad, the next of kin relatives here in South Africa communicate with us. So we are the people that are able then to inform them about what is happening with the next of kin. We also provide logistical support and non-financial assistance. The non-financial assistance, that links to qualified services I was talking about. Non-financial assistance for South African nationals who are in hospital or who may need to be repatriated to South Africa for urgent medical attention. So that non-financial assistance links up with the qualified assistance. In other words, the assistance that we render to our people abroad when they are distressed or they are destitute is not supported by any financial obligation on our side. So we also provide advice, guidance, and support to the custodial parent, guardian, or committee on parental child abduction. We have challenges related to child trafficking. You know, we also then provide guidance and advice in those cases. We also render consular assistance to South African nationals arrested or detained abroad. So there are certain procedures that we follow in that aspect. For instance, if a South African is arrested in a foreign country, how do we get to know that a South African is arrested in a particular country? In terms of the Vienna Convention, countries are obliged to inform the embassy of the citizen that has been arrested in that country. So they are obliged to inform of the arrest or detention of a citizen of the country, doing then that information to our embassy, High Commission or Consulate General. So we get to know then of a South African that has been arrested but having been informed by the host country, because it has got an obligation. But if it happens then that we don't get informed, and an inquiry is made by members of the family at home here, we follow up on the matter. And then there are processes then that are followed, so that then we are able then to interact with the person in detention or arrested. And that person then in detention or arrested has got certain rights. Some people when visited, when they have been arrested or they are detained, they don't want that it should be communicated to anybody, and we need to respect that. But there are certain forms that people must fill in that would instruct us of what is it that we should communicate and what is it that we should not communicate. So I remember that times you will find questions that would be asking a particular person arrested somewhere as to what is happening with that particular case, and we don't provide an adequate answer on that one, partly because the person detained or the person concerned has restricted us in terms of what is it that we can communicate and what is it that we can not communicate to who. So there are also those decisions. Those people then have got those rights that they can say yes, they can say no. However, even when a person has said, please don't inform my next of kin at home, don't communicate this to the media, but we continue to make contact with him to make sure that all the human rights aspects related to him being there, that those human rights are taken care of. Because we don't want our citizens to be mistreated in terms of the privileges and benefits that are given to the nationals of the host country. So we look at that. So we notify them the next of kin if we have been permitted to do that. We also assist them that person in detention or in transfer, I mean in detention, if they need funds. So we have a channel in which we can transmit the funds to that person coming from the relative's home here. We also then interact with the next of kin, you know, here at home, in terms of what is it that they can do and how should they transmit money, you know, to this person, and so on. Yeah. Can we go to another slide? Legal requests and processes of administration. We also facilitate a service process via diplomatic channels. This would relate to summons served to respondents abroad. We also facilitate through diplomatic channels. So documents would be prepared by whoever through the Department of Justice. They come to us and we channel them through our embassy for submission to the country consulate. So we also then facilitate other legal processes. The same applies then if our missions abroad are requested as well to facilitate the movement of the documents, they also do the same. So we also provide them consular, we assist in cases of extradition, documents, and also Robert Schindler's and evidence on commission. So all the documents that would require any person to come and appear in a commission in South Africa here, they are channeled through DICO, and this is the division then that works on those documents to make sure then that when they reach the destination. So we also provide then notarial services. That is what I was talking about then. Notarial services, that is then the legalization of official public documents. I'm going to explain what that entails. then we also then assist with the content. So the booklet and also the pamphlet that you see there, we develop content because we are at least effective in terms of understanding what is it that our people would need when they're outside the Republic. But we are not responsible then for publicity. Publicity is with public diplomacy within DICO. So they are responsible for branding, they are responsible for accompanying, and they are responsible for distribution. But we work together with them because we understand the subject better than them. So the content that you see there hasn't developed us. So we within them the roster, not the legislation of South African abroad. We have to agree with that acrimony. The roster, even though then, if you look at it, when you talk about legislation of South Africans abroad, you say there's nothing missing there. But we have to compromise to say this should be roster. So that roster stands for registration of South Africans abroad. We created a platform as Zilco. And that platform is only unique to Zilco. And it has to be created to be unique to Zilco because it needed to be secured. It needed to be safe. We needed to make sure then that the information that people will provide will never be given to any person, including the public protector. We cannot avail any information that is on the roster to any person. It is strictly confidential. So whether it is the public protector, it is CIA, it is whoever, nobody would have access to that platform. We only activate that platform when there is an emergency, like we have now recently or ongoing, the Lagos disaster. So that is where then we activate the roster, because we would want to know whether there are people that have registered traveling to that area, so that we are able to say to our embassy, to our consulate general, these are the people that have traveled to that area, be on the lookout and please provide assistance. So the roster then helps us a great deal to know our people as they travel all over the world. So it is a unique platform within the Department of International Relations. You cannot get it anywhere else. And it is online. So people can just go online, go to the website of Zilco, and when you go to the website of Zilco, go to Consular Services. You will see the stamp roster. And you click on that stamp roster, and it will give you a step-by-step process on how to register as an individual or as a group if you are traveling as a group. And it will give you then a specialized number that you will keep. So when then people return from the trip, they can deregister. So we also provide them that service. When it comes to immigration and civic services, as I have indicated, the mandate lies with the Department of Home Affairs. However, Department of International Relations abroad render these services on behalf of the Department of Home Affairs. As honorable members will be aware, Department of Home Affairs could not deploy officials throughout the world where they got missions. So where Department of Home Affairs had not deployed, automatically officials of the Department of International Relations assume that duty. They perform that duty. So we render this on behalf of the Department of Home Affairs. Basically, what we do is to receive the applications. If people want to apply for a death certificate, you want to apply for a passport, you want to apply for an identity document or smart card now, what we simply do is to receive the applications and we transmit them for processing at the Department of Home Affairs. And when they have been processed through the channels that they've created, they bring them back and we distribute them to the applicants. Yeah. So that a person who is somewhere in Ouagadougou does not have really to travel and apply for an ID document or a birth certificate at home here. So we provide them that facility. Expectations versus reality. Qualified service non-financial support. People and missions abroad must respect the sovereignty of countries. Once we have our citizens that get arrested, once we have our citizens that unfortunately may pass on a dying in that country, we are obliged that we must respect the domestic laws of that country. So my point is going to talk on that. That is why we are faced with the Nigeria situation now. It is because even when we've got capacity that we can deal with certain things, we have got experts in terms of fingerprints, we have got experts in terms of whatever forensic requirements, whether you talk about your pathologist, we've got them, there is no way that we can just simply go and impose ourselves. We must wait or find a way to say, can we be invited to assist? If we are invited to come and assist and you are welcome, thank you very much. But if not, we must patiently wait for the processes of that country, you know, to be completed. And then we are told, now it is ready that you can take the people. A case in hand, Nigeria disaster. DIRCO and Middle Abroad cannot enforce the South African Constitution, the Act of Parliament, and South African Court Orders Abroad. So we have got, unfortunately, those restrictions. We cannot intervene in private legal matters and private labor disputes abroad. We cannot. We cannot. I will indicate as we move on perhaps what is it that we can do. But we cannot intervene if you have got a private matter, you know, on one of the high level cases that we are going to talk about. Our people were lured into a business camp in the United Arab Emirates. Somebody pretended to be a business person and that he could assist in terms of financial support on mining and other businesses. He's got capital. And what happened then, privately, our people agreed with this person. The unfortunate part is that the documents were written, for instance, in Arabic. Because they trusted this person so much, you know. They signed the documents. And in essence, what the documents were saying, that you are in debt to me of over $480,000. That is the problem. So we've got two of our three states patrons who are in the chains of United Arab Emirates. Yeah. Because what happened then? They were following up on the businesses, you know, that they engaged with this fellow. And when they arrived, they got arrested because they owe services rendered to them of so much amount. Yes. And the legal system in that area is very difficult. Very difficult. So we have then a case that is pending. There is nothing we can do. Yes, we are going to talk about diplomatic protection. It doesn't cover that aspect because diplomatic protection is also only activated if it is a matter of a business, you know, that gets affected as a result of the state interfering with that private business of a South African in that country. That's when then we activate diplomatic protection. What I'm saying is that the diplomatic protection only applies if you have been offended as a result of a decision by the host government. So you should have been affected in your business by a decision by the state of that country. then we can talk about now, let our minister on this matter, you know, intervene. So we activate the diplomatic protection, it will be ourselves, consular affairs, it will be the legal division within the department, and also the political life partners, so that we can put together all those and then advise the minister that on this one, let us put a diplomatic protection or consular protection.
Just to make an example there, let's say, should the unthinkable happen, the government of South Africa changes, and then people who come in power decide to expropriate the properties of the foreigners without compensation, the government of those people can be able to activate the issue of the diplomatic protection.
Yes.
Exactly, what I would say.
No, that one,
there's an exception to it, maybe so that the committee can understand. Yeah. The
creation of funds.
Yeah, because that one, diplomatic protection was refused on other persons. So maybe if you can expound so that they can understand the issues.
I think it's the case in Zimbabwe. We did activate the diplomatic protection, but what then was discovered was that when that was in process, the owner of the farm, the person concerned, used a Zimbabwean document when he acquired that property. And that became a problem then, because he used a Zimbabwean document, yes, to acquire that property. He did not use a South African document. So if that person had used a South African document, then would have pursued, you know, this diplomatic protection and get with Zimbabwe. But Zimbabwe says to him, this is our citizen.
At the time he wanted
to acquire the land. He became a Zimbabwean, and as soon as he had acquired the land, he reverted to a South African citizen. In fact, without Zimbabweans knowing, because if Zimbabweans had known that he is no longer a Zimbabwean, that would have been a problem. So we have then those situations. Another example of when we activate a diplomatic protection. In this country, for instance, we don't have a death penalty. So if it happens, our person gets convicted in a foreign country, and that leads to a death sentence. So our minister immediately then, through the support of this diplomatic protection, engages with the country. So we engage with that country, So that then we are able to put our position in South Africa. We had, for instance, a successful case in Iran on that aspect. And unfortunately, we were late in China. I think about 5 years or so ago, we were late to that. So we also have that the diplomatic protection, but it does not apply to individual cases. It is only when there is a death penalty, or when a state has, in fact, you know, affected you, activate. Otherwise, you will, the rules related to how your business was established in that country will apply within the domestic law of that country.
I think we'll see a hand from Honorable Kumbang.
Yeah, hands in, the woman was handling the problem. Yeah, what happened there? It doesn't necessarily mean that you'll practice. It means that you'll talk.
Just to let on that case, I think what was unfair with Mrs. Bosch is that she had appealed that death penalty before the process could be concluded. She was attending. And it just happened when we were in the New South Africa. Yeah. So what repercussions did you arrest for Tswana for doing that? Mm-hmm. And then allow Honorable Kenya and or any other person.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to plead that you must let the presenter to present and finish up. You must step out everything that you want to ask, because now it's confusing some of us. Thank you.
Alright, thank you, Honorable Kenya. I think that's how the meeting around of the PC. How long do you think your presentation is going to take? Because I guess now we're almost 45 minutes.
Yeah, we're not far.
One far from there. Alright. Papa, you can respond to that one of Mrs. Bosch and then deal with it, because we're on the table. And then we take your questions at the end.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I don't have the details on that case of Bosch. Even when we activate the diplomatic protection, it is not a guarantee, because we still rely on the good diplomatic relations between ourselves and the country concerned. The last 2 bullets of the expectations and reality. We also cannot get a person back of jail. So we don't represent people that get arrested. We don't represent them. The only thing we do is to inform the person concerned of all resources that are available in the country, and one can use them, those resources. Otherwise, we don't intervene in the due processes of the law of the host country. We also don't pay ransoms on hostages. We don't pay ransoms on the hostages. These are the high-level cases that currently we have. There is a talked about case of Mr. Perikorki from Bloemfontein. From the state, who is in Yemen. So it is a very difficult case. It is a very difficult case. Yolanda, the wife, was released, but Gordy is still kidnapped. And this is exacerbated by the political situation within the country. It makes us difficult, because in these cases we deal with the government. But if there is no government, it makes our work very difficult. So the gift of givers are also maneuvering, finding their way as well on how best they can assist, and we interact with them, though we don't mandate them to do that. But for purposes of us getting information at times, we interact with them, because what becomes critical at the end of the day to us, which we must communicate with the family members, is the proof of life of the person in that situation, whether that person is still alive or not. So we try then to maneuver to make sure that at least we get something that we can convey to the family members that the person is still alive. There is also Stephen McGowan, and this has been going on for a long time in Mali. So he is still there. And Daniel Hansen of Rinsdeck, again, it is a challenge related to business transactions that did not go right. So the person is still in Equatorial Guinea detained there. Even when the courts have, in fact, released him, the person that is owed by Van Rensselaer appealed and got him back in prison. So we continue then to do the visitation, the consular visits to him. There is nothing much we can do. And these are the two colleagues that I've been talking about, Tsulu and Kambula from Free State as well, who were duped then and found themselves in the United Arab Emirates. So it is also that advisable that you go out to do business, make contact with the embassy in that country, so that you can get a sort of an environmental scanning of who you're dealing with. So it was that unfortunate, these people look so good and they were invited to Free State, They had a cocktail party and were convinced that they are dealing with the Quran people when it was up or not. Then the last then point would be Nigeria with the collapse of school. I'd like my colleague maybe to talk to that one so that honorable members can be as well be briefed on that situation. Thank you very much, Professor.
Honorable Chair and honorable members, regarding the Nigeria disaster, I'm not going to be too long. Basically, what the Chief Minister spoke about is the role of consular services. And there is about the non-financial and so forth, but now with the Nigeria disaster, it was a major disaster. It involved a lot of South Africa. So basically what happened on the 12th of September, the sleeping quarters at the Synagogue Church of All Nations collapsed in Lagos. It was a complete news blockage. We didn't know about it until literally a few days later. So round about on the 15th of September, we then heard via our mission in Abu Dhabi, Lagos, that there were 67 South Africans presumed who perished in that building collapse. So what we then did, we then decided to activate the NAT joint. So I'm going to speak about what the NAT joint is. And on that very same afternoon, we obviously asked the networks to then a coordinating mechanism to activate the whole government structure to deal with the situation. Now, the networks is a national joint operation intelligence structure of South Africa, deals state security and intelligence. But because this was a disaster, the head of the National Disaster Management Center was brought in then, as also as a co-chair, to say, how are we as government going to be reacting to this whole one? So we then activated the NAT during the very same day with all the key departments. Most of them is basically TAPS, SANDF, Health, DIRCO, Social Services. Those are some of the key departments. What we then did in the very first meeting, we analyzed based on the available information that we had at the time to say, now how are we going to address the situation immediately? So what we then did, under the leadership of Mr. Ken Terry, who's from the National Disaster Management Center, we then decided to send an assessment team through to Lagos. They left on the 17th of September, followed by a second team. Basically, their task then was to look at the situation on the ground, to say, what must South Africa do? Because at that stage, we still didn't have all that much information. And even in the news reports, all they showed was just that building collapsing and virtually nothing else. When they obviously arrived there, they realized that it was a very bad situation with a lot of challenges. So we then decided, we looked at the medical situation, we sent up doctors to look at the injured in the hospitals to say, okay, the medical, the facilities, they aren't that good that we needed to immediately repatriate them back to South Africa. So what we then did on 21 September, an ex-South African Airways plane, South African Air Force plane departed for Lagos, with a large team of SANDF medical persons. And you would have seen on TV then, on the 22nd of September, 28 of those injured came back, and two of them were little kids, the brother and sister of 2 and 4, that had been orphaned in the whole collapse. They were all admitted to the Steve Biko Hospital, with the Department of Social Development obviously providing the psychosocial support to the families. Now, the second phase of this whole project is obviously the repatriation of the mortal remains. There's 116 bodies, but we know that 81 of those are South Africans. This is the second largest disaster that we've ever had. Now, of the 85 bodies, 4 of them are foreign nationals from SADC countries. Those governments have asked us to bring back those bodies because it's SADC. They will then repatriate from Zla. But the current challenge that you've also seen in the media is the identifying of those bodies. So the DNA sampling, fingerprints, and all of that has gone to a company in Stellenbosch. They were appointed by the Nigerian government to then do the identification. So as a South African government, there's not much we can do until all of the bodies are identified. Then obviously, once we get the go-ahead from the Nigerian government, that all those bodies have been identified, they'll be able to hand them over to us. So what we will then do, we'll send 2 planes up with a team of persons to retrieve all of those bodies from the mortuaries in Lagos and return them to South Africa. Now, as I said, this is the first major disaster this kind of South Africa is dealing with. We did, however, have a tsunami in 2004. But in that one, it was basically some government departments, the Jewish Board of Deputies and their care that actually come together. And we also sent a plane and we brought back 75 South Africans and 17 bodies at that time. In this case, we have to think outside of the box. It's not your normal policies that apply. For example, the National Disaster Management Act does not apply to South Africans who die abroad. It's only applies in South Africa. So every department is having to think, now how are we going to be dealing with such a major disaster with so many South Africans involved? So we had a dedicated team of officials, there was a NATO's task team, of which we are part of, that we've then worked on a plan to say how are we then going to return the injured. Minister Jeff Adaro is head of the Interministerial Committee, and he has been briefing the South African public on the development, and hopefully soon he will then be able to confirm the date as to when the bodies will be returned. And so the NATO remains seized of the situation, and we will ensure that we bring the bodies back to the loved ones in South Africa, and also in a very dignified manner. So South Africa will continue to fulfill its obligations to citizens who are in distress abroad. So basically what we're talking about, consular, this is a unique case that we had to deal with slightly differently. We've seen how other countries in the world also deal with major disasters. So I think South Africa also, especially as a government, we have fulfilled that obligation, and we are making sure that they're all going to come back and that we're going to hand them back to their loved ones and their families. Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot. Is there any other parting shot?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. The area that perhaps I may want to end up with is not the registration of South African companies. It was said that when we had almost 349 people that had gone to that, you know, church service, that we did not know as South Africans that we have such a big number that is outside the country. And it brings in then the question of the registration of South Africans abroad, because this is in fact a voluntary, you know, service. So we can't force people to register if they don't want to register. But the challenge is when an emergency occurs there, then what happens? It is our people, and as government we get obligated to act at times. So we have then this booklet and this leaflet with GCIS, and we hope then they will be able to find a way to honourable members, so that honourable members in their constituencies, they can join our minister, because our minister in all the outreach programs, so ROSA becomes part of her program. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
All right, honourable members, I'd really like to thank the department for a very clear briefing which has been given to us. But then it's our chance now to engage with the presentation. Are there any takers? I just noticed Honourable Kalyan, the first one, and then Honourable Raputi, and then we'll be followed by Honourable Kenny. In that order, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much for that very interesting briefing. You did say that there's an overlap between home affairs and international relations in terms of looking after prisoners in other countries. Now, last year, Parliament attended a conference in Quito, and we had an opportunity to visit some of the inmates in prison in Quito, South African citizens arrested for being drug mules. And what I found really distressing was that these people were only visited maybe once in 3 months by the Home Affairs, because you know the Home Affairs officials had to travel from Panama to Quito, and they could only do it once in 3 months. And in one instance, that one individual had no communication with his family back home in Durban in Port Edson. And despite following up several times and received no response on whether he's ever been able to make contact with his family. So the overlap is what I'm trying to say is that who monitors if the Home Affairs people are doing this? Who monitors an outcome? because I got the impression that the one individual that was doing it at the time, you know, was doing it and he was doing his job, but to me, there's no accountability. I was trying to be, to find out who is he accountable to, so that we have an end result. What is the turnaround time in processing overseas applications? The office in Delhi has got a backlog of thousands of, I think it's about 6,000 applications for visas, tourist visas to come to South Africa. And either that office is not capacitated or it doesn't have equipment. And so I've written to the minister to ask for a reply, but none have been forthcoming. The Minister of Home Affairs. But because it's situated within the international mission, the international affairs mission, what is the turnaround time in terms of granting visas? Because it's having an impact on the tourism to this country. You found it, but do you understand my question? No, no, he's starting a bit, so I don't know whether he needs any input. And lastly, thank you for the input on the Nigerian situation. I mean, are those bodies being kept in a buffer place, or has decomposition started? And how long more do you think these families would have to wait before closure? I understand that DNA testing and all that takes a bit of time, and it has been fast-tracked. But at the same time, you know, there's promises of money and trying to appease the families, but at the end of the day, they want to see the body and put closure on it. What do you think or anticipate is the expected time?
But reading here, I'm sorry, it says the vast number of South Africans who travel abroad do not encounter any problems. I think that is related to South Africans, Honorable Kalyan. I'm sorry. But I really welcome the presentation. I think it came at an opportune time, and I think it needs really to be cascaded to other stakeholders, you know, firstly in our communities. This is a really proudly South African flagship. I really don't want to, you know, to waste more time on this, but it's an excellent kind of the services that is rendered to our South African citizenship. Thank you.
Honorable Kay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. Also, Honorable Kalyan has asked but on this issue I was concerned about, but to further ask, yes, now it's more than a month on the Nigerian issue. It's more than a month now. When we talk about travel, it's almost 2 months, because that's on the 12th of September, when that okay. Now, just to ask, you'll say that because of the delay in the DNAs, what causes this delay? Is it because of the records unidentified, or that makes it to be difficult? What I understand is expensive to take those that are finished, but at the same time, we are obliged as the government to wait for the other DNAs. Now the question, that's why I'm asking this question, what is the delay? Is it because of the records not known, or whatever? Because the delay is there even in the in bone. And secondly, also on the same issue, do you, as you contact your relatives, don't you talk to the relatives to check, now that I think some of the bodies now really are the remains, they decomposed there, because this is a long time ago. Don't you get anything for some relatives to opt for the cremation? To offer, because some of them won't be identified. Just to check if you really do that, just to convince them, or to check if they need any cremation, so that they can get the ashes from that side. Also, on the issue of the voluntary, maybe it means her in the look at, because really this is the particular that we must say, let the roster to be voluntary, whereas at the end of the day the government is going to suffer, because government is obliged, they are saying, to look after the children. If they don't, when there is something that is a matter that okay, that is a responsibility of the government, as it is as citizens. But at the same time, this is not voluntary, it is voluntary. It will create more problems, maybe, that we can, maybe if that we can meet really the amendment, but that's for people's sake. We are talking about the natural disaster management, exceptional region, which that is why I'm asking. Natural disaster management act does not have so I think also on that, that also will mean that something must be done, but by not by you in September last year, like that's the comment. In case that you say you assist in case of water turmoil on natural national emergency, the need and the support to those cases. As much as I understand the respect of sovereignty of countries, and as you know that South Africa is the champion of peacekeeping, and we know that we also are also part of the United Nations Security Council. The reason why I'm asking this question, I'm also concerned, yes, of course we know that Nigeria is another country, but also the girls that are there for more than 6 months, as you know that the Boko Haram kidnapped those kids long ago, more than 6 months now. So just to check, don't you think, as much as I know that yes, you spend the sovereignty of the country, but don't you say, for peace, as I still say, for peacekeeping and for peace building purposes, as South Africa, can't you don't you have anything to spend with us? What do you think can be done, despite us knowing that really Nigeria is that one? But maybe you can make inroads, I don't know how, but just to check if nothing has been done so far. Thank you, Chairperson.
All right, thank you, honorable members. I really like to welcome honorable Dati in this meeting again. And then the other two members would like to leave, honorable Maila and honorable Mbumlwana, they have attended a portfolio committee on justice. They have to adopt a report on the PRRR report. So I think that it takes precedence. It's not because they spiked the presentation. It's because of the other duties which they have to undertake. All right, on my side, I just have about the three questions also. The first question is the issue of the sovereignty of the state. When you say that once the South African citizens are in a particular country, they have to obey the laws of those countries, where they are. The question will arise, let's say a South African couple leave South Africa, they go to the United Arab Emirates or to another country, someone decides to divorce the other one there, where the provisions of our marriage community profile does not apply. Will the Home Affairs in South Africa recognize the divorce? Because they are now in another stage, in another country. That's all. What is the limitation of this sovereignty you are raising? In particular, coming to a case of that nature. Number two, it will be the issue of ROSA again. I still want to. You said that platform cannot be accessed by anyone, not by CIA, not by Mossad, not by KGB. It is in existence. You want to tell me that it is so foolproof that no one can hack into the system? Are you sure that no one can hack into that system? Whatever. Because if someone can hack into that system, it means that you can get it from out of it. So what is it which makes you to be so confident that it is hack-proof? And then the other issue is the countries where we've got extradition treaties with them. If someone, let's say, is running away from the country, running away from the law, you can see that the arm of the law is very long, but he runs away, and then he goes to the country where we've got an extradition treaty with them, and then those guys decide to be nice. They decide not to be nice, they don't operate with you, they don't bring that person in. What record do you have in South Africa? They will just take those frequencies.
Thank you very much, honorable members. My colleagues are also going to help me. Thank you for these questions. we shall try then our level best to share with honorable members. On the matter of the consular service to prisoners, maybe to correct the honorable member, it is the duty of the Department of International Relations in the mission to make visits to the prisoner. It is not the Department of Home Affairs. And the head of mission, the ambassador, monitors every aspect related to activities, you know, of South Africa in that country. So if there would be issues related to prisoners, and if those issues have not been elevated and the ambassador may not be aware, it would be unfortunate. Otherwise, the ambassador monitors all those visits that are done by the officials from DICO in the mission, not the officials from the Department of Home Affairs. The officials in the
chairperson, a point of order, yes, may I say something? Yes. I accompanied myself and Honorable Ramakrishna accompanied the Home Affairs official to the present visit. So I speak from an informed perspective. But I appreciate your response. But your correction is wrong, because I paid a personal visit with the Home Affairs official.
All right, to help you with the situation, but in this case, I think that everything must be answered as accurate as possible. Can you give the name of that prisoner to the official so that they can go and make a follow-up and come back to us after some time? I think that's how we can resolve that one. Thank you. Can fire on.
Honorable Chair, thank you very much. Maybe I can just further explain. It could have been an official from the Department of Home Affairs mandated by the ambassador in the absence or in challenges related to officials that do that duty in the mission. It could have been. But this is the mandate of DIRCO, not Home Affairs. That when it comes to the turnaround time, we rely on the leadership and also the management of the mission, dictated by the circumstances on the ground in that particular mission. It will be difficult, Honorable Chair, for me to say what is the turnaround time for a visa, because you are dictated by the number of people that come to apply for the visas, and also then the systems that you have put in place, which systems in fact would be aimed at ensuring that we provide the best quick service to in our missions, you know, as possible. So it will be very difficult of me to say what is the turnaround time. It is really with the mission concerned. However, even in the event that there are issues, the head of mission, the ambassador in that mission, always look at concerns that are raised pertaining to the services that are rendered by an embassy of South Africa, whether it will be civic or immigration. How long do these take? Honourable members would also perhaps be aware that the missions do not issue these documents. They receive applications, and these applications are then transmitted to the Department of Home Affairs to our secured banks to South Africa. We have got a dynamic interaction
as Jericho and Department of Home Affairs in ensuring that the processing of the documents as a result of applications that come from the missions should be prioritized and be expedited as much as possible, because that person is far away from home. We Home Affairs has also even advised the missions to say it would also help applicants, you know, outside the Republic, if they have submitted their applications to the missions, that they also give a contact of the local person at home there who can come and collect the document on behalf of the applicant, you know, so that then the process can be fast tracked. So we try our level best because of a dynamic interaction between ourselves and the Department of Home Affairs in as far as, you know, the application, the processing of applications are concerned. But we don't say there are no delays. Subsequent business, maybe deal with this.
There was a question on the issue of the person was arrested apart from Einham.
Yes.
Yeah, I was not yet had contact with the family. I think that we can check the details thereof so that we make a follow-up.
Now, on that one, indeed, we can check the details. Mm-hmm. Yes. Remember, we can check details of that person who is incarceration in that country, where contact has not been made with that person, so that we can check with our embassy, our mission, what could have happened, and we deal with that matter. It falls then within my ambit of operation. I will make a follow-up if I can get the details. Nigeria? You want to do this? Lynn will help me on the Nigeria issue and the Buddhist.
Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, with regard to Nigeria, the bodies are being held in three different mortuaries in Lagos. Not all the mortuaries would be according to our standards in South Africa, but it's not ideal. And yes, there has been some decomposing of those bodies. But the Department of Social Development has been keeping the families informed. And all of the families have been informed that they will not be able to see the body of their loved ones. They will basically be bringing the bodies back. It will then be given to them in a sealed coffin, so because of the state of the bodies. The families have been informed. It was actually a building that collapsed. It was six floors that fell like a pancake, basically. So one can imagine the state of those bodies. But as I said, the Department of Social Development has assigned social workers to each and every single family, and as we get information, they are informed. Now, when it comes to the issues of fingerprints and DNA, with some of those bodies, they've been able to identify them through fingerprints, but the rest they have to do through DNA. And as we indicated, it happened in Nigeria. South Africa did offer assistance, but the Nigerians, they've got their practices, they've got their laws, so we need to respect them as a sovereign state. They're also doing the investigation, which we cannot interfere with in terms of their local processes. So we are very much dependent, though, on the identification being done by that company in Stellenbosch, appointed by the Nigerian government. In terms of cremation, all of them want the bodies back, so there's no cremation going to be taking place. In terms of that of the Disaster Management Act, we're obviously going to be looking at new policies and processes. And even in terms of our own department, we're part of a task team after this now to say, how are we going to be dealing with major disasters of this kind? Because we see more and more disasters, because of the plane crash and all those kind of things that countries now have to deal with. And South Africa must also be ready to deal with those kind of things very quickly. I think that pretty much covers all the questions that I had with Nigeria. Thank you.
All right. To the department?
To
the department, I think that's all the issue of Nigeria. What was omitted is the issue of
did Nigeria require any help on the issue of the kidnapped children? What is the status thereof? And if not, from the side of the AU in particular?
Honorable Chair, we are not aware that Nigeria had approached DIRCO in terms of assistance on the 200 girls that we have had. However, we have always been ready if we are requested by our fellow African countries to assist where it is possible. But one other aspect I would want to share with honorable members is that relations between the Republic of South Africa and the Republic of Nigeria remains very cordial and good. We are getting cooperation, including on this disaster, when we engage with the Nigerian government. Perhaps one aspect that I may just share with honorable members is that the challenge basically is on the political dynamics within Nigeria itself. You have a federal government in Nigeria, and the local states have got full autonomy. And you will agree, honorable members, then that governments deal in terms of diplomatic and bilateral relations at the level of the government. Now, there have been internal dynamics within Nigeria itself, that the state of Lagos is an independent state. And it wanted then that certain protocols relating to the state of Lagos also needed to be fulfilled in terms of the processes related to the identification and other things, so that finally they were able to repatriate our people back to South Africa. Now that's where then the challenge is. It is not between South Africa and Nigeria. It is also then that there are internal dynamics, you know, that the local state of Lagos wanted that they should be fulfilled on this matter. In fact, what they are doing is not outside what South Africa would do as well. There is no way that we would have allowed, you know, bodies that have been affected in this country to be repatriated to another country without a proper identification. So in a way, what they are embarking on is precisely what we would have also embarked on as South Africa. The only difference is only on the pace of doing it, and also the fact that they don't have capacity like ourselves. For instance, we would have done the DNA test and DNA sample analysis inside the country, but with them, they don't have capacity. They first checked with the United Kingdom, the United States of America, and South Africa, and we're happy that they offered to use South Africa. And right now, these DNA samples are here in South Africa, and they're being analyzed by our own people, and we are the affected party on this matter. We have got an interest, and our wish and hope then is that this matter is going to be expedited, and we hope it is going to yield positive results, so that at least by the end of this week, we may have better news in terms of development to that aspect. The sovereignty, better than the yeah, it is not easy. Honorable Chair, it is not easy. Because you know there's sovereignty of the state, and there are also bilateral relations, and now bilateral relations where you have structured, for instance, engagements between the two countries, you find that there will be different in terms of how they would look at that matter, because it would also depend on also other processes that are involved in terms of how do we engage, you know, with that country. So it is where I don't have a definite answer on this one to say that this is the answer, but it's been looked into on the basis of what other self-engagements do we have done in that country, and whether this aspect has been covered. If not covered, what is it within the broader structured, you know, bilateral relations that we have with the country that can look at that aspect? The other thing that Honorable Chair I also wanted to explain is that the consular services we are talking about, they are not independent. They are an integral part of the services that are rendered by an embassy of South Africa abroad. So they are not different. It's only that within the embassy you would have a division dedicated to consular matters, including civil and immigration. So, and you would also have then consulate generals. So consulate generals as well would not only be focused on consular matters only. They would be doing political work, they would be doing economic work, they would also be looking at this consular. So the consular functions in the embassy are an integral part of the functions of the mission.
Please,
let me know if there's a question that I have. My colleague will come in on the service of the
summit.
Any
questions? Thank you. Regarding the service of a divorce sons abroad, yes, we do often have South African nationals, both of them married in South Africa, and then they are living abroad, for example, I think you mentioned Dubai. What happens then if, let's say they then appoint a lawyer in South Africa to handle the divorce on their behalf at the South African court. The court then issues an edictal citation where the court gives permission for the summons to be served abroad on the respondent. So usually the plaintiff requesting the divorce, it serves through the marriage channels on the respondent abroad. And what is then required is there must be a proof of service. Now, the service can take place in three different ways. The process most often used is that where we, under cover of a diplomatic note, we forward the summons to the local, through the foreign ministry, to the local Department of Justice. They will request the sheriff of the court in that foreign country to serve the summons on a person at a specific address. A proof of service must be completed, and the proof of service then gets returned to South Africa, where we at DIRCO received, we hand it over to the Department of Justice, hand to the register of the court handing that divorce case, and from that point on it will become a South African issue handled in accordance with South African law.
Well, they cannot use the foreign pass to
marry the South African. In certain countries it will be possible, depending on the jurisdiction of the courts in that country. In some countries they say yes, they will be. If they register the marriage in that country, and if that country acknowledges the South African Marriage Act, then it can be done in that country, and then it will be in accordance with the laws in the foreign country and not the South African court. So that's an option, but that depends on the couple.
Thank you, Sir President. Let me just round up with the heading of ROSA. My emphasis on the ROSA was that this is a unique platform created by the Department of International Relations. And we were saying, as DIRCO, we would never avail this information to anybody. However, if in terms of the hacking and so on, I cannot have a guarantee. But ourselves, we keep the information very confidential. It would never be given to anybody. So that is the assurance that must be given to the people when we talk about registration and also the usage of this online service, that this information is safe and it is not availed to anybody except the person that has applied to have access, and would only activate it when there is an emergency, an accident, would activate it for the purposes of the embassy or that country to know who are the people that have registered that have traveled in that region. Thank you, Honorable
Chair. Thank you for the answers. I could see that they are very difficult. The questions are very difficult. But we'll engage further about that. I think I have got two extra questions from Honorable Muniswami, Honorable Kalyan, and Honorable Takli.
Thank you very much, Chair. You know, I'm just asking this question, maybe it will help me to answer other questions. One is that, what are other countries, how are other countries dealing with the situation of their people or the deceased in Nigeria? And are we noticing that there might be some kind of a faster process or intervention that maybe... Maybe I'm asking the question in relation to the relationship for South Africa and Nigeria, if there is, to any extent, any kind of influence that might have either positive or negative on the situation. But Chair, you know my concern is this, on this Vienna Convention on the consular relations, is that it's very mild and it's very old. I don't know why we are not thinking outside of the box, as you said in the slide. That we need to start looking at what kind of amendments are we going to make in terms of dealing with the situations that we have, in terms of these conventions and treaties. Because when we consider some of the treaties that South Africa has with Nigeria, the inner main is extradition treaties because of criminals, because it's not a secret. We don't know, I mean, what is the other impact that could be there with the release of these bodies. And they have to deal with the tax issues, but they're not dealing with treaties of a nature of a humanitarian African situation. So I'm not sure about the extent to which we have been able to apply our minds, not only internally, to the kind of agreement that we have in the continent. I think that's where the question of the AU's pressure comes in terms of making intervention in this situation. But to move beyond that, we can't just take old useless treaties but sometimes, I mean, Article 37, what is it saying? It's not saying anything. It's not saying something that can say it can give any kind of immediate relief. All it says is how can talk together, honorable, and then what? This is a crisis. These are lives of people, families that are not going to be able to see the bodies and the faces of their loved ones ever. So my view is that I think the department needs to go beyond in this situation in particular to say how do we propose either amendments to the convention, one, or how do we then say that I don't know, maybe it's an unrealistic thing, but how do we then say that, you know, the extent to which the impact that is being felt and what guides us on some of these relationships that we have, and how do we then create the kind of environment in the case of a humanitarian crisis, which, I'm not speaking about other scenarios, but especially in the case of an emergency, so that we can expedite the situation, so that these can give effect to go beyond relationships and just relations into a deeper obligation to a human consideration. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Gardner.
Thank you. When was ROSA established, do you have statistics, say for example 2013, how many people registered and what your intervention was? And if they are deaf at all, or Cape Town throws our desk, or does it all have to be done online?
And I think there was a suggestion that there would be ROSA desks in other countries. Is that up and running? Are you identifying key countries, like maybe high, you know, tourist areas that South Africans go to? I mean, just some thinking on that.
Thank you, Honourable Taki.
Thank you. In a situation like I had recently where a constituent an adoption had taken place on a child within the Netherlands and it has now been seen as an illegal adoption, but there was no issue with the validity of the court order, but there was wrong information that was actually on the website of The Hague. So the information on the Permanent Bureau in The Hague was outdated. So the child was now being sent back, and I don't know today whether the child was back or what, but it was a huge sort of trauma for the child. And I wasn't sure who I was supposed to contact to do that. And now sitting here listening to you, I'm thinking perhaps international relations would have been the key. And what in that sort of situation, who do we actually, what do we do? What's the quick way? Is it writing questions to the minister, which I did, I could questions or from whatever, but that's all a process, and that's not going to help in the drama of the moment. It's just to do with obviously the Home Affairs laws and the changes are the issue, but they can't help the problem. So I can get the full details to somebody, but who? And that there was a second thing. In a situation, for example, like I'm going to a conference in Oslo next week to do with religious freedom, and I've been invited by individual MPs there, but they have asked that if your country had an embassy in Norway, I would be grateful if you could invite a staff member from your embassy to the non-parliamentary only part of the conference. Now, I'm seeing this in terms of now I should register online and going, which I will do, but in terms of that situation, who would I contact there to actually tell them what I'm up to and with the invitation? Because it's short notice as well, so.
Thank you, Honourable Rapuji.
I've got SMS, I think 3 weeks ago, and it happened, the people are not South African, but they live here in South Africa, I think they've got him. And their son went to Nigeria. They cannot find the son. Can I give you the name of that son of theirs? It's Jean. So you, in case you can be able to assist them. Okay.
All right. I think that's about to close out this meeting. I just also have 2 questions. Again, it's still on the issue of sovereignty that I'm going to ask. Let's say we have a country which uses torture to extract information from the people alleged criminals. Someone from South Africa is in a prison in Thailand. If he's tortured, what can the department do around that? Because sometimes even when you go to court, that information is accepted through torture, which is legal in South Africa, although it is allowed in the country. So what is going to be the status of that person? And then on the other issue, you know, you go to a mission in Japan, Tokyo. They raise the serious issue that there are a lot of Japanese people who come to South Africa through the work permit. But once they land in South Africa, they change their status from being work permit to permanent residence. The frustration from the side of the mission of Japan was that these people in their records, they are there as the special case, but suddenly those people, even when they change the status, they don't refer back to that. Who handled that situation? The third question would be the issue, what's going to happen when someone, no, America can do such sometimes illegal things. They can take the people from the country, let's say from country A, if they feel that he has committed crime against, they go extradite that person by not the normal process. Not the normal process of extradition. The same people, special forces, grab that person, take him out. If that could happen to a South African, what would be the response of the department?
My colleague is
Honourable Chair, the first question on Nigeria. Remember I indicated there were 116 bodies. Now primarily it was a South African group that went to Lagos. They had groups going from different countries and that was a South African group. And it was in the sleeping quarters. As we indicate, 81 of those are South Africans. We know 81 are South Africans. 4 of them are from the SADC, which we're going to be bringing their bodies back. The others are Nigerians. They were construction workers that were building that building. So we've got a clear understanding of those 115 bodies, what the division was. Now, when it comes to the Vienna Conventions, I'm the Director of Diplomatic Immunities and Privileges. I deal with the Vienna Conventions and the other conventions on a daily basis. It is very relevant. It's used throughout the world to create an order as to how we conduct ourselves with other states. And it doesn't matter that it was done 61 and 63. We use it every single day throughout the world and it's very relevant. There's some conventions that even go back much earlier that are still very relevant now. These conventions are also part of our Diplomatic Immunities and Privileges Act, which makes it law in South Africa. So it's also domestic law, not just international law. And then just when it comes to new immigration laws, which is actually a Department of Home Affairs mandate, just answering your last question, that is Home Affairs, but just to inform you that nobody may change their status in South Africa, that is what the new immigration laws is. Yeah, it's a new one now. So they cannot change their status in South Africa. And there is Chief Mdisha will answer.
Honourable Chair, just to firstly respond on the question regarding the inter-country adoptions. Now, the mandate for inter-country adoptions lies with the Department of Social Development. They have a specific section dealing with these cases, and they then also have central bureaus in the various countries working with each other. So, the section at Social Development will deal directly with the counterparts in the Netherlands, for example, in this case. So we at the Department of International Relations do not actually deal with the technical aspects of inter-country adoptions. But if the details of the case are shared with us, we will gladly follow it up with Social Development, or if I receive the particular details, I can forward a contact details of the person at Social Development to the Honourable Member that can they take it up directly with that section in the Social Development. Okay. Yeah, so we cannot really then intervene in the functions of that department, but we can submit an inquiry as to where it stands, and we will gladly see what we can do just to facilitate the process. Then as far as the torture is concerned, it relates to various other cases. For example, where we get information that somebody is being tortured or that somebody is not receiving the appropriate medical care and things like that. We do try our best through prescribed diplomatic channels to take these issues up with the authorities in that country. First of all, the diplomatic channels will mean that we will have to take it up with the foreign ministry of that country, and they will have to discuss with the prison authorities. We do have, in most countries, good contacts with the prison authorities and with the directors of individual prisons or correctional facilities there. So, our consular officer will try, for example, when it's a medical problem, that the person is not receiving the treatment he's entitled to first engage in bilateral talks with this correctional facility to see if the matter can be solved and whether medical treatment can take place, or if any torturing is taking place to put a stop to that. But if we have proof that it did take place through the diplomatic channels, we can voice our concern and our objection to the country regarding this treatment. And then it depends on that country how they will react to it. We cannot really, especially if it's normal practice in that country, it will be difficult for us to put a complete stop. But where it's South African citizen that's subjected to this, we will object to the do the process. The problem quite often with prisoners is South Africans are kept in the same facilities as all local prisoners.
Yeah.
And it's difficult then to for us to get better treatment for South Africans than the treatment that is given to the local prisoners, because everybody's treated the same. But within the channels available to us, we really try our best to address this. There's also a United Nations document as to guidelines for the treatment of prisons. And usually when we raise our objections, we refer to this UN document. And we say that according to the United Nations charter, it's not supposed to be happening in a, because they have certain minimum rules. But not all countries adhere to the rules in their internal systems. But when mistreatment comes to our attention, we do act.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Invitation to Norway. Honorable member can use our own office here to indicate your intended visit to Norway, so that they can write to our ambassador in Norway, informing them of a pending visit. And we also encourage them, honorable members, when they arrive in a country, that your first point of call should be the embassy in that country, because it helps you a great deal, because you get informed about the environment in that country and also other things. The registration on the ROSA is online. You can do it here. You can even do it when you are in the country where you'll be visiting. So it's online. You can do it, you know, anywhere. You just go to the DILCO website or consular services. You see the stamp of ROSA. You press in there, and it will give you a step-by-step process in terms of registering. The ROSA was launched in 2008, and we had an average of 300 people that register per month. It is not moving with the pace that we would love it, you know, to do, and that goes then with the campaign, you know, and also the tools to support the campaign on the ROSA. I must admit maybe that we may not have done enough, especially in communicating and sharing with honorable members, so that this service can be communicated to the people on the ground. But our minister has been doing very well in all the outreach programs, going to universities, we were there with the minister with our pamphlet, and ROSA has been also a prioritized. So we have, for instance, in the lounges at the airport, the Ubuntu magazine. And if you go to Ubuntu magazine, we are there. ROSA is also there, you know. So it is not enough, I agree. We still need to find a way to put more resources on this and to ensure that, you know, this can be, because if you would look at the amount of people, if we're talking about an average of 1,000 maybe per month that register with the ROSA, as compared to the number of people that travel. So it means people are not really well informed in terms of that they must register with the ROSA. I have also personally taken on the program with the ASATA, the Association of Travel Agents. I've traveled all the provinces with them, the Mpongo, KwaZulu-Natal, East Cape, Awate, North of Dilko, focusing on the ROSA, and they have embraced, including lead South Africa. They have embraced this concept, and they are going all out now to make sure that they've got our concepts when our people apply, when they purchase tickets and so on. This message will also be there. We are also engaging with the airport, ICASA, what is this? AFSA at the airport. Yes, we're finding a way in which in the boarding tickets we can have a message, you know, that reminds people to register. Our embassies on the ground also have this information. They've got their own programs in the mission. Whether you talk about some mission, the Association of South African Residents, you know, who are residing in that country, or you talk about South Africa Business Forums, or you talk about those people that the South Africans, they would invite when they've got their freedom days and so on. You know, this is also part of the message that is conveyed by our ambassador, and they're doing fairly okay. But I think we need to add more resources on this topic. It has become very, very critical. Because, you know, we were also shocked that we did not know that in Nigeria we had so many people that had traveled there. So it is going to be then also a matter that we are going to ensure that we go all out. Our division of publicity and diplomacy within BIRCO is the one that is focusing on publicity, whilst consular services provide the content on this message. Thank you very much, Dr.
I see there's one hand, although it was tempted to close the meeting. Honorable Kenya, and then followed by Mr. Marcel.
That's a small question. We are saying we've got 85 ministers that are there. And part of the 85, we've got 4 foreign nationals. My question is that, are there refugees here in South Africa? If not, have we conducted, what are their arrangements to their areas of death? Because now I think about taking the bodies to here and now having to take the bodies back to where they belong. So what is the position? Thank you.
Mr.
Machel?
Honorable Chair, as the committee custodians of foreign policy here and also representing the people of South Africa who elected them, can't we form partnerships so that here in Parliament you empower honourable members, because you are the one who have that information, who know that, empower other members of Parliament to take this to their constituencies during constituency to empower their people so that it becomes easy. Thank you.
I think it's a good outreach approach next, which you have, because we must use whatever platform which is available.
Honorable Chair, regarding the other 4 SADC nationals, they all live in South Africa and they've got all of their families here. So we've engaged officially with those governments with the request that the remains are repatriated to South Africa and they'll be handed over to the families. If they then decide to go back to whichever country, it's then for them to decide that. So we've responded officially to SADC countries with the request to repatriate the mortal remains to South Africa.
Right. That's once more to emphasize, if as part of the members are going to take again this ROSA campaign to their various constituencies, including amongst honorable members, we want once more to emphasize that the platform where the ROSA is created is secured, and the information is kept confidential, and that the ROSA falls within the websites of the government and which falls then under the jurisdiction of the state security agents. So we are making sure then that information would not be shared with any other person. So it is what we communicate. But people get worried at times to avail their information, the next thing starts behind them. So some of them run away from registering. So they want, you know, to be followed and so on. But we want to assure them that their information will not be used for any other purpose except to assist in the event of an emergency as the person is about.
All right, honorable members, really, I think that we are coming to an end of this meeting. I really like to appreciate your participation on your alertness and then your commitment to this committee. Even if we have extra work, we still come and serve this committee. So I'd also like to thank the department. What I really appreciate is that, what I would like to appreciate
is that the issues raised around the table must be attended as obviously. Just like the name which I requested the member to give you, there's nothing wrong by giving back a feedback to the member concerned. That on this, I'll make an example. Usually when we do our constituents work, you meet your constituents on Monday. On Tuesday, you take their issues to the relevant departments where they're supposed to go to. So that by immediately again, we feedback that to that constituent that wrong matters being escalated to that level. So here at this MPs have raised these issues. I really appreciate the situation that whereby this their requests are going to get the proper attention. But also appreciate the good work which are doing. I know that to navigate through the international sphere is very difficult. Because stuff like dancing with the travel, you never know which side is going to turn. So really your work is really appreciated, although we'll expect more from you. Because there are certain questions which realize that they cannot be answered, you cannot answer them. But I think that they must be dealt with at a focal level. That's where they can be touched with. But really, I appreciate including with the way that with the shown leadership and the support staff was really good. They tried their level best. Also appreciate the staff of the department, of the portfolio committee, for organizing this meeting and ensuring that the refreshments are there. I don't know where the people who told them that they could share those refreshments, which should be offered outside. I don't know, because I didn't see any of them having anything in front of them. You know, in South Africa, we go to Ubuntu. You share whatever you have. We can be ahead of the locals. We share it together. Therefore, I think most that. Are there any announcements you want to make? Nothing. All right. If there's no any other matter, really, I propose that this meeting must be adjourned as now, so that we can prepare for the question time in the afternoon. Thank you for being loyal South Africans. All right.